I've learned to be a better listener through them because I know how important what they have to say is. And I have literally learned to be a better listener.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
What's going on, everyone? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast, and I'm very happy to have Steve Holy. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, sir. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. I couldn't be any better than I am right now, to be honest with you. I'm excited to be back in the game again after spending years off the road, and it's just times are good.
Well, I'm glad you're taking the time to chat with me about fatherhood, your fatherhood journey, and of course, your music career. Congrats on your latest album, A Christmas to Remember. We'll get into that, and we'll get into just, I love bringing on guys like yourself who embrace fatherhood. There's, you know, the tie between your career and fatherhood and what you realized about being a dad and making sure you're there for your family, which I think is very commendable, and I applaud you for doing that. I know my audience will as well. But Steve, take me back. When you found out you were going to be a dad for the first time, what was going through your mind, sir?
Well, first of all, I'll never forget when she was actually born, when Ava was born, my oldest. She's 13 now. I'll never forget after about day two at the hospital, they said, okay, you're free to go. And I'm like, literally, you're going to leave. You trust me to do what you've been doing for 2 days to do for this girl? I was planning on staying there for another 6 months. I'm like, we do not need to throw this girl to the wolves. Being a recording artist, being a musician, I realized that's probably the most self-centered thing you could possibly do for a living. And I was just, to be honest, I was not ready for that. I was not ready. I didn't know anybody else existed other than me. And that's a joke, but...
I know you're joking, but... I believe once you become a parent, you realize sometimes how selfish or, you know, self-centered your world is. Like, just quickly, I remember when I was out on my own after I got out of college, I had my own apartment. I remember just having to get an oil change, and then dental bill came up in the mail, and I just called my parents and I said, thank you. And they're like, for what? I'm like, for everything. Like, you realize there's a lot of things that go into life that you take for granted, right? So I totally agree, man.
Yeah. Having Ava and Ella, my youngest is Ella, and having the girls, I finally realized, wait a minute, I guess my parents did love me in a strange way. It's like, like you, I'm like, thank you. I'm like, wow, you guys did love me. You were just trying to show me tough love. You're trying to make me a man. Ridiculous saying this, but I honestly didn't think my parents loved me because they were definitely strict. And I'm the youngest of 8 children. But once you have your own, you realize that the love that you have for a child is stronger than any love you could possibly have. And that was an eye opener for me.
No doubt. And talk a little bit about, especially with your career and your experience with everything that, you know, it took for you to get where you are and all that in your career and just being a recording artist, musician. Hard work, of course, has to be something that you appreciate and probably have passed down to your kids. But talk about some of the other values that you were looking to instill into them.
There's a fine line in being, this is probably a crazy way to look at it, but the love that you have for a child, it's so easy to give them a pass on things that you weren't given a pass on. There's a fine line in being their friend. You know, yeah. They're my best friends, but I don't want them to know that. It's such a fine line. I've noticed that I allow them to quit things because, I mean, if they have a cough, you know that you feel their cough. If I could remove a pinky finger for them to never hurt again, I would do that. Every father knows he would do whatever it takes to never have pain. I don't want to make things too easy for them. And I probably am not the disciplinarian that my father was. I know I'm not. I want them to be a hard worker, and I want them to follow through in life and to this point at 11 and 13, the girls are, it would probably be that I don't want to be their friend, although I want to be their friend. And I know I shouldn't be their friend.
I hear you. And I think my daughters are I have two daughters. And I think they're the same age as 13 and 11.
And, oh, my. Wow.
Yeah. And you want, like, one of the people of our generation or with kids at our kids' ages, we feel like, you know what, we weren't given this or we didn't have this. And I think each generation wants to make sure that their kids have a better life. And sometimes we don't pack them with the grit or the hard times or certain times that might come up that, you know, will give them resilience. But I think this pandemic has definitely made them learn how to cope with things, how to see things in a different way. And it's just maybe, you know, God's plan or whatever, how you look at things being like, I mean, again, I don't wish this pandemic on anybody. Everybody is still going through it. And there are people who are suffering through this pandemic still. But I feel like this has kind of taught our kids some grit and, you know, you have to navigate through it. And I everything that you're saying, I feel wholeheartedly, because you want to be their friends. You want to communicate with them so that they will have an open line of communication. But you also want to make sure that they know that you're the parent and you still want to discipline them because it's for their own good. And that almost sounds like, you know, I don't want to ground you, but it's for your own good. And I remember hearing that as a kid. I'm like, what are you talking about? If you love me, then just tell you, like, don't do it again and don't ground me. But you got to learn. There's got to be, you know, consequences to your actions, right?
That's so smart. You're a wordsmith. Thank you.
You know, no, because I think we've, like, again, I just, one of the reasons why I love having this podcast and talking to dads is because we're all in the same boat. I think fatherhood is definitely something that we can all relate to, and we all have our ups and downs. We have our good days and bad days. And not only do we feel like we're the ones that are, like, teaching our kids and our spouses are helping that, our partners are helping that as well, whether you're single, divorced, whatever the case may be, there's people in your life that'll help you out. But on the flip side, our kids are teaching us valuable lessons about life and certain things. Like for me, and like you said too, just like, you know, sometimes we thought we were the center of the universe, but when you have kids, you realize life is bigger than just you. And I think everybody has that notion, whether you're a parent or not. There could be something that, you know, life experience that a person has that you're like, things are bigger than me, right? And you get out of that, like, I always joke, like, high school and college, you're into your own world. And then when you get into the quote-unquote real world, you're like, man, life doesn't like revolve about when I wake up and when I go to bed. For you, a long way of me asking this, but what is something that your daughters have taught you about life or yourself in general? Like, is there something that they have shared with, like, that they have taught you about, a life lesson or something that through their actions or through, you know, just being their dad, you realized a certain quality about yourself that you'd like to share with me and my audience?
Oh, wow. Have I learned a quality about myself through my daughters? Well, this was neat to hear. I've learned to be a better listener through them because I know how important what they have to say is. And I have literally learned to be a better listener. I don't know if that's answering the question, but
no, it's great. No, that's a perfect answer. I love it, man. Keep on going.
I was one of these guys that didn't do a whole lot of listening. You know, it's like for my whole life. And being the youngest of eight children, I didn't think I was being heard anyway. So, I'm just going to go. The more I wasn't being heard, the more I talked. And I realized, well, it's just being the youngest of eight kids. That's how it is. You know, so me. And then no listening. Right. So
you got to fight for your spot, right? When you're the youngest.
That's right. That's right. When your parents have five girls and three employees, that's exactly what it is. You know, yeah. That half gallon of Bluebell ice cream that you got once every 6 months didn't make it to number eight. You know, I was just born a little too late to get that ice cream. And that's a fact. But
yep.
My daughters actually taught me to be a great listener. Because I just didn't listen to Kathy Treese or Kathy, Danny, David, Treese, Lori, Amy, and Meg. I was, like you said, I was fighting for my spot, and I've learned to just take in every bit of what they have to say. And because of the importance of it being my children, I learned it's okay to listen. That's my long of the short.
No, that's perfect. I think especially nowadays, you know, it's that balancing that act of being there for them as a friend, but also being there for them as a parent. So yeah, I think listening is huge because communication isn't a one way street, right? You talk, but then you listen, and then you digest what you're listening to, and then you have a further conversation. You know, the conversation extends. So I love that. One more question before we get into music, and it can be a piece of advice. Again, your daughters are the same age as my daughters. It could be for new dads listening to this, or it could just be a dad hack, something that you know you feel like you cornered in the dad space, so to speak. So is there a piece of advice you'd all like to offer to new dads or a dad hack? Like, I'll give you an example that I always throw out to people about the dad hack. When my kids were, you know, toddlers and babies and they were still in diapers, you come home from an event, you make sure you restock that diaper bag with all the necessities because you don't want to go back out there with an empty diaper bag. So I always say that, and people listen to this like, all right, here goes with that dad hack. But for you, talk about something that, you know, a piece of advice you'd give to new dads or a dad hack that you'd like to offer them.
Oh, wow. Okay, so when the girls are upset about whatever it may be, whether they didn't get a piece of candy, whether their teacher got upset with them at school, I wish every father, every family would do this. And I'm sure they do. I'm spiritual. My children go to a Catholic school in Dallas, like I did as a child, K-8. They're at a Catholic church. I think anytime I see a frown on my daughter's faces, I immediately sit down and say a prayer with them. And for some reason, it's still working to this day. After we say that prayer, there's a complete calmness that is over them immediately. And my dad hack would be prayer immediately, and just shut everything down, get through the prayer, and it's worked 100%.
Great, great piece of advice. Yeah, whatever, you know, faith, whatever you have, I would say, you know, just take a moment, and especially if something's, you know, like they're having a bad day or something is very, like they didn't get on this team or they got a bad grade when they usually get good grades. Like having that moment and, like you said, doing what you do, I think is a great way to be there for them, try and calm them down and you know, and make them feel better. So I love that. And I got to applaud you.
Yeah, through prayer, yes.
Yeah, and I got to applaud you because you took time out of your career, you put it on pause to be, you know, with your family more because you found that, you know, you felt like your family was like, where's dad? Well, he's on the road and he, you know, he's trying to make a living, but also, you know, provide for the family and all that other stuff. But you put your career on hold because you wanted to be there for your family. Now you got a new album, obviously, Christmas to Remember. Of course, put up links where people can purchase this album and just also your music from the past and all that great stuff. Talk about your inspiration to do this Christmas album as kind of like your comeback. I know that your daughters encourage you, like, all right, dad, go do your thing. But talk a little about the inspiration to your, you know, your first album to come back is a Christmas album.
So 9 years of not being on the road, and I do want to go back. This may be a question for later, but what made me decide to stop this, which was the craziest thing in the world. That's all I ever wanted. That's all I ever cared to do. I was touring for 15 years nonstop. You know, if I stopped to get water, I was ready to go again. And it was just, I was just in that spell that I was in, you know, all about me. Right. So,
yeah.
When I got off the road, I want to say my oldest was 4 and my youngest was 2. And I walked in the door and I set my bags down and my oldest was there. And I said, Ava, she turned around. I said, how are you? She said, hi, Grandpa. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I said, Ava, I'm dad. And that's when I had tears. I mean, she just turned back around and played with her doll at the time. And I thought, this is not right. I can't do this. I have to stop. And I did, right? And I had four or five more shows that were on the books that I had to do. And the whole time I was there, I was all I could think about was, in the middle of a concert, was getting back home to Ava and Ella.
Yeah.
And Mom, of course, and Christy, my wife. And when I finished those four or five dates, I went home. I'm like, okay, here I am. And then I'm like, I'm not good at any of this. I don't know how to change a diaper on Popcorn Sally, her doll, or, yeah. You know, I just not who I am, but I know I've got to be that guy. As a matter of fact, they even signed me up for coaching soccer. Well, I don't know anything about soccer. You know, I was a football, baseball guy, basketball, but I don't know anything about soccer. And I'm so sorry. I went such a round way around the question, but I had to get that out, because this is when I had that moment that I wanted to share with you, Art, that why I did that. Now I already forgot what the damn question was.
No. Let me just say something right there. No, I appreciate you kind of giving the background. I was going to ask you that, but I'm glad you brought that up. No, it's great. Just another thing too, what you said, like, you know, you didn't have, you know, experience even like changing a diaper off of their dolls or something, or even learning how to coach soccer, right? Yeah, here's the thing that I think sometimes dads get caught up in or feel ashamed to admit, or whatever the case may be. When you go to a job, right? When a new job, obviously you're a musician. Like when you became who you are, you had to learn certain notes. You had to learn how to write music. You just didn't all of a sudden, like, yeah, you could write here and there. But as you grew into your career, you built upon your experience and you learned more skills and you became better at your craft, right? I think, like you said earlier, when you when the nurse is like, "All right, see you guys," after 2 days, you're like, "Wait a minute, wait, we're going home. Like, I'm responsible for this other living creature." We all have to realize that being a parent is our biggest job. And for me, when I became the stay-at-home dad, there were certain things I was scared of. There were certain things that, you know, was nervous about. And then obviously, I became started work on my own and started my own business, and you know, I was able to balance work and family. But a lot of dads sometimes feel like, oh, I'm not doing it as great as my spouse or this or that. On the flip side, for the moms who might be out in the workforce and the dads might be staying home, the mom's got to, like, you know, cover something because the dad's got an event or whatever the case may be or something. They're like, I don't even know how you do it. Like, the question is, the saying is, like, I don't know how you do this while I'm at work the other day, like, all day. Because you're not used to it, because you're not involved in it every day. Once you get your own pattern, once you get your own routine, and kids, young kids thrive on routine, then all of a sudden there's that light. You're like, I can do this. There's that aha moment. So I really appreciate you sharing just like the vulnerability and everything that you were kind of nervous about once you got off tour and you're like, I'm going to spend more time. And like, I don't know anything about soccer. I remember I was going to, like, before the pandemic hit, I was going to be a volleyball coach for my kids' Y team. And I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I coach a basketball team. And I was like, okay, like, they appreciate me being there. And I remember there was a high school student. She was going to be my assistant coach. And I said, cause we had like two or three practices. And I said to her and our team, I'm like, first things first, you know, she is your head coach. I'm the assistant coach. I'm the one who's going to be emailing your parents and all this stuff. What she says, follow her lead, and I'll be here to help out. And I think everybody appreciated that, because I was like, I'm not going to be like, I know exactly what I'm doing, even though this person's got way more of experience about volleyball. But as we were going, I was learning the terminology and this and that. But now it's my turn to, you know, apologize for the rant. But I just want, because I know a lot of parents listening to this can pick up on what you were thinking and feeling, being like, I didn't know what I was doing, but it takes time. And especially with something that you care about and love so much, in this case, your kids, you want to make sure you're going to do it right. So I just wanted to say thank you very much for that. And I was just asking, like, the premier question about, you know, your music is, you came back to do, you know, with your career with a Christmas album. Just what was the inspiration to do a Christmas album as your first album back in the game, so to speak?
Well, it really came down to the moment that I realized that that Ava and Ella were ready for me to do it again, right? Because the funniest thing, and so it's like, wait a minute, this is, we're talking September, Dad, don't you want to be famous again? And I just busted, what? So what do you mean? Well, Snuffy or whatever their friend's name is. Well, their parents told Snuffy that you were famous. I'm like, and I just, really, what'd they say? Well, they said that they listened to your music for years. And I'm like, oh, that's great to know. And they're like, don't you wish you were famous again? I said, I never really thought of it that way. I guess maybe I was. And he said, well, why don't you do something, Dad? I'm like, well, I wanted to be with you guys. They're like, well, just think, if you were famous, we could meet Taylor Swift. Well, I know Taylor Swift. You know you don't, Dad. I said, well, I had a song called I Got a Brand New Girlfriend. It was my number one song for me in 06, I guess, yeah. 07, 06. They said, and I said, she had a song called something, I believe it was Tim McGraw.
Yeah.
And it was her first single, and we did a show together. You saw her? I said, yes, I saw her. In person? I said, well, honey, she opened for me at a show that we had. She had a song called Tim McGraw. I had a brand new girlfriend, and my song was number one at the time. And, oh, my, you mean, when you say open, what do you mean? Well, she went on before me. Oh, does that mean you were a bigger star than her? I said, well, no, but I, for that minute, and if you'd check back an hour later, she was probably closing for me, because that did happen later.
Just, Steve, in that moment, how much Dad's, like, credibility, like, awesome street cred did you get from, like, your kids being like, wait a minute, hold up, what?
Oh, my gosh, it was so, it was the nerdiest thing you've ever seen, because I milked this for everything I could. I literally told the girls, I said, look, not only did I meet her, yes, we did, but of course they walked right into it. They said, what did she say to you? I said, well, actually, she walked up with a notepad and a pen and asked me for my autograph. And they took off running. They called every one of their cousins. You're not going to believe this. Did you know that Taylor Swift asked for my dad's autograph? And I was so proud because that I met that dad that didn't take the trash out right, that didn't know how to coach soccer. I'm doing everything wrong for these several years. And it really came down to my girl saying, Dad, we want you to be famous again so we can meet Taylor Swift. No, but once I knew I had their approval and they were the ones pushing, it's almost like I started hearing melodies again, hearing music in my head again. And that's when it happened. And that could have been, I want to say maybe August, July or August when this happened.
Okay.
But I started singing in the shower again. I started breaking out into song for the first time in almost a decade.
I love it. And the fact that everything you said, like, oh, I wasn't good at this, wasn't good at that, but you found your lane being with the family. And then also, too, there was something that, you know, your daughters are fans of Taylor Swift, and there was a commonality. There was like, you guys, obviously, I'm guessing I know that your daughters have a different perspective on you now, being like, wow, Taylor Swift opened up for my dad, right? And there was something that they would be like, that's amazing, and that's crazy, and that's insane, and all that good stuff. But like, the fact that they encouraged you, I love that. And, you know, one of the questions I always love asking someone who is a musician, who's a creator, you know, you said you started to sing in the shower again. Talk a little about your creative process, right? Like, I'm always, you know, curious, because sometimes when we hear a song on the radio and it's catchy and we love it, we take it for granted, like the construction of the song and how long it took to, like, fine tune, no pun intended, everything for that song to, you know, be a hit and all that stuff. So talk a little bit about how your creative process happens when you look to make a song or an album, whatever the case may be.
As far as a song idea, I think every song starts with an idea. And then, of course, I've learned through life that if you went through the notes on my phone, I probably have 200 ideas, right? And yeah. So anytime I'm in a in a writing session in the past, which has been years, I always went back to my notes in my phone. Things that people say, or ideas that come to your head, like perfect example is, "We're getting right now." And so, this is a song that I wrote several years back that will be on an upcoming album. We ended up writing, but wrote it years ago. You think of that. Well, has that ever been said before? If you think about it, we're getting right now. We're getting right now. You look for things that when we talk about sculpting, creating a song, an idea, that it has to be something. I think every songwriter wants to say something that's never been said before and make it make sense. I look for my songs have always been things that I think me only are creative. When I use that phrase, "We're getting right now," I think, wait a minute, that's a double meaning. That has a double meaning. And I look for, I think the number one thing I look for in creating, we're talking either music, song, is saying something that hasn't been said and making it relatable. That's where I get my kicks. I really enjoy trying to say something that hasn't been said. I'm not elaborating on the rest of that,
I appreciate that. And again, that just kind of speaks to, your craft and how you look at your career and your songs and how you approach things. So I appreciate that. And, take me back when you heard like your a song on the radio for the first time and everything to get there. What did that feel like to you?
That was the most surreal thing I've ever seen in my life. I happened to be in Kansas City, and I was on my radio tour. This would have been 99. Back into my hotel room, we were at the radio station, and I want to say the guy's name was Shotgun Jackson, I believe. Of course it was. So we had gone back to the hotel, walked into the room, and my song was playing on the radio in the hotel room. I'm thinking, wow, okay. So I guess I left my CD in here of the single. Of course, I'm looking at a radio that was thinner than a CD. So couldn't the CD, and I don't think I had a CD in the room, but I'm thinking my CD is playing on that clock radio that's about this big, it's 2 inches big.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but I don't remember putting it in there. And why would I have it on repeat while I'm gone? And I'm like, wow, that's my song playing on the radio. And I want to be the tough dad, but I broke down and bawled like a little kid that got his ice cream stolen. I mean, it was
happy tears, right? I mean, it's probably just all of these different things. I know now it's a little different with like people can share the music on YouTube and, different, playlists and all that other stuff. I get that. But just for all the hard work, blood, sweat, and tears that you were looking to do, and like you get your song played on the radio, because that's huge, right? And so the crying of the tears is just probably just a combination of everything it took to get there, right?
You're right. It was happy tears. And I could have held I could have gone 30 seconds with Mike Tyson at that level.
Nice. I love it.
or 0.6 seconds, but the adrenaline, the rush was incredible for the very first time. And it never got old. Every time you would hear a new song, of course I had something like 6 top 20s and 15 top 40s and through the years, but I'm still in the witness protection plan. But it never got old. Every time the new song came out and you heard it, you wanted to stop and, like, "Hey, Domino's, can I take your order? Welcome to Domino's." "No, I just want to listen. I'm on the radio. I don't need any pizza. I just want to tell you, listen." You just tell anybody. Yeah. And it never, ever got old. And so to be removed from that from almost, you know, you still hear the songs on the radio, you know, they're still out there, right? And thank God. And a few of them, a couple of them. But it never got old, right? But to then, all these years later, have an album come out, you know, release a Christmas record, based on the push of the daughters more than anything, right? To then, you know, I haven't heard any of the songs. I haven't heard Christmas to Remember on a radio station yet. But when you hear it, you become that rookie again. It's just that excitement level is like we went to a Christmas party, early Christmas party, and they had all these beautiful decorations at their house, and they had a CD. They had the album playing outside on a boom box, probably. But when we showed up, just hearing that when you don't expect it, it starts all over again for you. And I'm sorry, I'm just rambling.
I love it, man. Again,
I don't like, to be honest with you, I want you to know, I don't like talking about me. I really don't. I always thought, like, the craziest thing is, I always thought that, and this, I can't even believe I'm saying this, but I always thought there was something wrong with someone when they asked me for my autograph. You know, I was that kid that thought, hey, you don't want to go to prom with me, do you? So I have issues. I apologize sometimes when I'm talking about me, although that's all we've been doing right here, right? But
So you never use that line from like a, what was it, Beaches, like, enough about me, what do you think about me, right?
Yes, I remember that, and that absolutely floored me. Enough about me. What about you? What do you think of me?
Yeah, so great.
So good.
Appreciate you sharing that, Steve. Now we're going to finish off with the Fatherhood Quick Five. And this is not just about you. This is about your whole family. So for you guys, and of course, we're kind of talking around the holidays and all that good stuff. Favorite family movie you guys like to watch right now? What is it?
We watch it every year. And it's Elf on the Shelf.
Okay, nice.
Elf on the Shelf. And I really look forward to the day that I can touch that elf.
Nice. And excluding your music, of course, favorite family song, or is there an artist you couldn't wait to introduce your kids to? Or on the flip side, is there an artist that your kids shared with you and you're like, this person's pretty sweet?
Oh, wow. I want to say maybe years ago, Adele. I think my daughters turned me on to Adele.
Nice.
And I would say, oh, wait, there was a first question right in there. I'm sorry.
No, it was just like, do you guys have a favorite family song?
I couldn't wait to turn them on. That was a question. I wanted them to know who Dean Martin was. Okay. I couldn't wait. He's a, you know, I always love the older music. I'm a huge Dean Martin fan. I still think one of these days I'm going to get to hang out with the Rat Pack. I did get to sing with Jerry Lewis on the telethon, and I did a song, it was a brand new girlfriend. He said, wow, we got a country song with rhythm. I'm not used to that. And I went, okay. I said, well, and I didn't give him a chance. I said, well, Mr. Lewis, I've always admired you, and I was also a Dean Martin fan. And I literally just broke into, you're nobody to somebody loves you. And then his band kicked in and they started playing.
Nice.
And that moment is out there somewhere. I would take my daughters to find it on the internet. But I got to sing with Jerry Lewis, I can't believe I just went into that story. I apologize.
No, I love that. That's great. Again, that's something that, you know, the music you appreciated and probably inspired you to get into, you know, music. You almost have that like common thread, like instead of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, it's the 6 degrees of Dean Martin, right?
Yeah, I always reminded myself of Dean Martin. Nice. just not cool.
Well, I think you're, you know, a lot of people probably think you're cool. And, you know, after you telling your daughters about Taylor Swift and your interaction with her, they think you're pretty darn cool as well. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we are literally going to Hawaii on the 27th of December. Nice. And so I couldn't be any more excited about that. We're going to spend New Year's in Hawaii. That's coming up. We've done some pretty cool things. But this will be the coolest. We're going to Kauai. That's the island called Kauai.
Nice. Well, have a blast. That sounds like it's going to be an amazing time. First album you purchased, do you remember?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? It might have been a Long Black Cadillac. Dwight Yoakam, I think, might have been the first one. I think the first album I ever got was Get Lucky, Loverboy. I didn't purchase it, but I think my sister loved Loverboy so much that she bought me the cassette for my birthday. So I got to hold the cassette for about 20 minutes, and it went into her bedroom.
smart on her part, right? Hey, I thought of you. Oh, you don't like it? I'll take it. Sweet.
And I mean, the guy had red leather pants on, and evidently it did something for her, and it did nothing for me. But anyway, that was my first album, Get Lucky, Loverboy, probably 84.
Nice-ish. And lastly, top three words you hope your daughters would use to describe you as a dad, what would they be?
Oh, gosh. Determined. That might be asking a lot. And that might work in a dream world, but determined, spiritual. You said top three.
Mm-hmm.
Determined, spiritual, great coach.
There you go. Nice, love it.
That's never gonna happen. This is all in a perfect world.
I appreciate all those answers. And people, make sure you follow Steve on Twitter at Steve Holy and go to his website steveholymusic.com. Check out his new album, A Christmas to Remember, and check out all his great hits. And Steve, it was really cool chatting with you and just kind of sharing with us your fatherhood journey and also just talking about your music and, you know, how your daughters encouraged you. And I really enjoyed just getting to know you a little bit more. I know my audience definitely will appreciate this as well. So thank you very much. I hope you and your family have a blast in Hawaii, and I wish you and your family continued success, sir.
Thank you, Art. And thanks for being part of my very first Zoom. I can't believe this is happening. I feel like an adult right now that I was able to pull this off, even though my daughters walked me through it to the point of just, Dad, all you have to do is push these two buttons, do this. So thank
you. That's another thing your daughters have taught you about life, how to do Zoom. But thanks again, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to artoffatherhood.net.